a little bit more, a few people here today. It is the first day. I'm glad I didn't get the, in the past I've had the Friday morning 9:30 session, which after the party doesn't turn out to be quite as good a session. But so we're going to talk today about API management, logic apps, and Azure functions. So how many people in there are actually, I'll introduce myself. I'm Bill Chestnut. I'm a Azure MVP. I'm the cloud platform and API evangelist for 6Pivot. I've been working with the integration stack in Azure for a while, and before that, BizTalk. So my Twitter handle is BizTalkBill. So I've been doing BizTalk now since probably 2001. So, but now I've moved more into the cloud integration space, spending a lot more time with the products we're going to talk about today. So let's go ahead and look at the agenda we're going to have for today. So first we're going to talk a bit about API management. Then we're going to have a little bit of a look at Azure, the logic apps, and then Azure functions. But what I want to concentrate is how all of those work together. Because basically, what we found when you're building any kind of integration solution in Azure, you need all three of these components. And we'll talk about why we do need that. How many people have already got APIs published? How many people are looking at publishing APIs? Are they mostly on-premise type stuff, or is it mostly going to be cloud?
Cloud.
Is there any mix of stuff? So we'll have some interest. There's some interesting things that API management will offer you. A lot of people overlook API management because of its price. And what I found is actually when you start comparing it back to BizTalk, it's cheap because you get high availability in all of the additions except for the developer. So let's go ahead and get into API management. So API management has been out there probably a year and a half, 2 years in Azure. It's come a long way, and they are working on it daily. Part of my demo was counting on some stuff to be finished. Didn't quite get finished. We'll talk around a little bit of that. But they did demo the stuff at the Ignite conference in the US. So we'll look at that. So if we look at what API management does for you in a API solution, it really helps you reuse services. So how many people would love to have a, like your, when you get a customer or you get information that you want to populate drop-down lists from, maybe a list of products and things like that. There's some times where you can actually take advantage of cached results. So if you're just fixing drop-down lists and things like that, you may want to cache those results. But if you're actually looking at that product to do an update on it, you need to get it new every time. You don't want to count on any cached information. And we'll see that with API management, we can actually have two versions of the same call, one of them being cached, one of them not being cached. And that gives us the advantage there where we don't have to write any code in our API to take advantage of that. We can do that all through the policies. Also, how many people are using an identity server like an OAuth 2 or something like that for their APIs? So a few people. The good thing about API management is we've got built-in support for OAuth 2 and the OpenID Connect, which is really OAuth 2 version 2. So we've got support for those guys in there. And it even works inside of the developer portal, which we'll see. It makes it so much easier to test. It will go out, it will ask you for your credentials, it'll go out and get those tokens you need to pass to do the testing. So, because I know how many people have tried to test an API that has OAuth 2 with something like Postman. And you have to go out, you have to go get the token, you have to put that token in there. We'll have a look at the developer portal. I don't have an OAuth 2 server set up, but I can show you where that's going to go, and it'll actually put it into the header for you and do that test call. So it makes it easier for your developers to get used to using it that way. And policies, this is the really important part of API management. I was talking to a customer of ours in Brisbane. They had 100 APIs they wanted to publish out to for their product. Of those, 5 of those were SOAP services still. But they wanted to put those out with API management. The good news is the SOAP support for API management is in preview now, and I'll show you that in the portal. So you can actually do a pass-through with SOAP services now. They're working on the REST to SOAP so that you can actually expose your SOAP services as REST, convert them in API management, call your SOAP services in the back. But what they did is they used the policies to transform the inbound JSON payload into a SOAP envelope, called the SOAP service, got the result back, converted that back to a JSON payload and delivered it. So that way the mobile phone app that needed to use it knew nothing about the SOAP, was able to consume that JSON. There's also now a XSLT transform in the policies, so you can actually apply a XSLT transform. There's also JSON to XML, XML to JSON that's already there and part of the policies. And the other one is, how many people, when you build your APIs, do you spend a lot of time building in throttling? So if somebody tries to do a denial of service attack or anything on your APIs, most people don't. Most people, it's we forgot that moment when all of a sudden something happens. It's one of the things we'll have in API management policies. We can restrict it by IP address. So if you want to restrict a certain IP address to so many calls a minute, and we also have the ability to do burst throttling and overtime. So that you may only want them to do 5 calls a minute, but want to limit them to only 20 calls or 60 calls an hour. So you can do both of those in the policies, not having to change your code. The developer portal is where you expose your APIs to either your internal developers or to the outside world. One of the customers I'm working with in Brisbane at the moment, they've got one API that they've got a contract developer working on outside of their organization. They're doing a hookup with Zendesk. So the Zendesk is calling into this API. So basically we've exposed that through the developer portal. That developer can go on there, do all the testing he needs to do in the developer portal, and then put that code into the Zendesk application. We'll also look at a little bit of reporting, and we'll look around a little bit around the continuous integration and continuous deployment. What they've done with that is they've exposed the API management as a Git repository. So you can actually clone the configuration from your instance of API management. You could take your dev instance, you could then manipulate the data in the files, and then push that up to your UAT or your prod instance of API management if you wanted to. So they've given you a way to do that. So let's go to the next slide. So this is just a quick look at the publishing portal. Now the good news is currently API management runs through the old Azure portal. There's going to be a public preview very, very soon using the new portal. The first preview is not going to have where we import the APIs and we configure the APIs, but there will be a second preview that has all of that. So they're going to get rid of the old portal interactions completely. So it'll all be in the new portal. And you'll notice there on that slide, you also get statistics about your APIs. So besides the reporting we're going to talk about, you just get a very quick set of stats about your APIs. And the interesting thing was that is when we had this external developer working on the Zendesk, it was very easy for us to tell whether he was doing anything or not. Because you could actually go into the portal and you could see the calls. And if we scroll that screen, or they go into the analytics part of it, which we will a little bit later, you can see each developer, their keys, and how many calls they're making, how many calls failed, all of that. And it also helped us proactively because all of a sudden we saw some 500 failures in our API. We went out and looked at the detailed logging from the API and we found out there was a bug in one of the APIs. So we actually were able to proactively fix that before they complained about it, which was a really good thing. So the next portal, this is the developer portal. Now, doesn't look the greatest to start with, but you can completely modify this portal to brand it, to configure it the way you want. It can match your other websites. It can also use several authentication methods. So you can use Facebook and Twitter and Google to let developers log on to your portal. Or if you've got a website that's already implementing some authentication, you can actually pass the authentication to your website and then let it pass back to the developer portal so they can use their existing logon to your website to do that development. So, and if you're interested in what you can do with the developer portal, the talk from Ignite US, which was at the end of September, they have a customer on stage with them, and they have completely redesigned the developer portal. They've got two other websites hooked into the developer portal for documentation and things like that. They've completely redesigned the menu and basically how it looks. So if you want to see that, I would recommend to go out to Channel 9, go into the Ignite US, and have a look at that topic. So what we're going to do now is hop into API management. And I'll apologize because I kind of got to sit down in a hole a little bit to work on my laptop to do the demo. So, and so basically what we have to do is we need to go to the old portal to start with. And what we need to do is we go here to API management if we want to create an instance of API management. We do a create. We give it a URL. So, and we give it a subscription. We give a location. So it's available. Closest for here would be probably Australia East and Sydney. And then we go and we give it a organization name, and this is what basically displays on the developer portal. So that's what they see, but again, you could come back and change that. And then you need to give it a admin email that you want it sent to. So there's some information you can have sent about when people register on the site and when they want to get a subscription. If you click on the advanced settings, you also get to decide what version of the API management you want. So the developer is basically a developer version. It's about probably $40, $45 a month for the developer. Then you have standard and premium. They have opened up just recently the ability for the developer version to use VPNs. When they first issued the product, they had only Premium Edition could connect to a VPN, so that if you needed to get to your on-premises resources or in a DMZ-type resources through a VPN, you would need to use Premium even for your developer work, which got a little expensive because it's about $3,600 a month. So the standard edition's around $850 a month. They are one of the biggest requests out there on their feedback site right now is for a session timed out. Okay, is for a basic edition of API management that's somewhere between developer and standard in terms of the pricing. And that decided to reload because I lost the internet connection when I first started. So that'll come up. I'm not going to go ahead and create one because I've already got one created that we'll use. And as soon as this reloads, we'll go in and look at the publisher portal. And this is the one that's going to actually be moved over to the Azure portal. So we pick the instance of API management and we hit the manage button. And what that'll do is that brings up the publisher portal, and we can see here we've got all our dashboard that shows us the different APIs that we've got and the calls that have been made. And you can look at like today and yesterday and up to 90 days. You can look at the APIs that we have out there. So I've got three different APIs. There is a default Echo API that gets installed when you create your instance of API management. And the nice thing about the Echo one is it shows you how to do a cached version of an API. So, and then you also have products. So typically your products are used, in this case what they do, they come with a standard starter product, and that starter product has a policy implemented on it so that you can only make 5 calls a minute and I think 50 calls an hour. So this is if you're trying to monetize your API, you may offer different levels of subscription to the customers that want to use those. The other product's Unlimited, which basically gives you unlimited number of calls that you want to make to that. The analytics basically break down our calls into several different categories. So we've got things where we can see the top developer, the top product, the top subscription, the top API, the top operation, all of those kind of things like that, so that you can figure out who's using. Because one of the good takeaways I had from the API days, and I think the API days was just over here not long ago, is that people will find ways that you didn't expect to use your APIs. So monitoring your APIs is vital, because they'll find some way to use them that you never expected. And there has been a few attacks because people were able to do certain type of queries with one API, which then fed them data that they could use in some of the other API calls. So you just have to be a little bit careful. And being able to monitor your API calls with these tools gives you that ability. If you want more detailed monitoring, we'll see in a minute in the policies, there's a section where you can actually log data to the Event Hub and then process that Event Hub data however you want. So you can basically collect what information you want into Event Hub and then process that into either table storage or a SQL database, something like that. So what I want to do is first is show you how to import an API. So I've got one out there that I've got some swagger for. I just need to grab the connection. I'll go back in there and I'll do an import API. Now, this is one of the new things that's just happened this week. So if you see that WSDL preview, you can now point to a SOAP service via its WSDL, and you can import those APIs into API management. The good thing is it's fully supported. So even the test in the developer portal works with a WSDL-based API. What they're working on in addition to this is that, again, that REST to SOAP, so that you can expose it as a REST service, calls the SOAP service in the back end, and then delivers the REST out to the client. So what I'm going to do here, I'm going to use the URL. So I've grabbed the URL. I'm going to tell it it's Swagger. I'm going to give it, because all my APIs are going to, for this one is going to be ignitenzbc.azure-api.net. I want to have several different APIs in here, so I'm going to give it, this one's called Conference. And that'll just be a suffix. So I'll find this one by ignitenzbc.azure-api.net/conference, and then my APIs. And then I'm going to add it to the unlimited product. I'm only going to open it up for HTTPS calls, because one of the things I do need to do in most cases is I need to pass the API key as part of the header. Now, if you're making your APIs completely public and you don't really care who's calling them, you can, in the product, you can turn off that API key so they don't have to have that. But in most cases, I think you want that API key so you can really tell who's using the product. So then I'll go save. This is going to read that Swagger in. It's going to create my APIs based on that. So there's the summary. The settings here, you'll see that we have the URL for the site, and then we'll have all of the operations. So we'll see you got the all of the different operations. I think there's a fair few operations in this particular API. Now, just to go, that's basically, now my API is ready to go. Because that API is running against an API app, I can make a call. In just a second, we'll hop over to the developer portal, and we'll actually make a call to one of these APIs and get a results back. But in the meantime, what I want to do is I want to talk a little bit about the security, just to show you a couple of things. The first thing is that you have control over whether you want to enable the API endpoint for API management, so you can manage the APIs through an API. So it's a little bit funny that API management has its own set of APIs, but that's basically for any kind of management you want to do. This is where you also configure your repository for your Git operations. If I can hit the button. So basically that you turn on the Git repository, and what you need to do is you need to go in here and you need to do a save configuration. And that will take the configuration out of API management and put it in that Git repository, and then you can go into your favorite Git tool and clone that repository down to your machine. Just quickly to show you that, if I hop out here into a different and I just put it in the temp, and what we've got is we've got API management, and basically there's all of the different things that are defined in API management in that Git. If you were customizing your developer portal, you'll notice there is the templates there and styles for the portal. So you can actually have those in there, so that way you can do them for both your dev portal, your production, any UAT portals and things that you've got. And they can be stored in your Git repository. So that's basically the security side of things. We'll have a quick look at policies now, and later on, I've got another demo. I'm going to add a few more policies, but we'll look at our Echo API. This is the one that comes out of the box. And what we'll notice is if I open up the different operations there, you'll see that the little square block, that means that there's a policy against that particular operation. And if we look at down there, we see the retrieved resources, and then we see the retrieved resources cached. So in the back end, it's calling exactly the same API in your code. One of them, when you return the results, it actually caches those results for 5 minutes. And if we look at that, we can look at the policy that's associated with that. And we can see that basically there's the policy information about the caching information on the call. And then there's the actual storing of the results into the cache. And you'll notice that it does a rewrite on the template, because right now the template is retrieve resources and it's resources underscore cached. But in our backend API, underscore cache doesn't exist. So basically, we have just the resource. So we need to rewrite that. So we also, there's a view effective policies. Because you can have policies at the product level, at the API level, and at the operation level. So this view, the effective policies will show you how they all go together. And just a real quick one in there, you see where it's got base in each one of those? So what happens is that if you want something to happen in your operation before it calls the policies from the API or the product, you put it before base. If you want it to happen after it's called the policies for the product or the API, you put it after base. So, and that basically controls that hierarchy in there. So if you've got throttling applied across all of your APIs, but you may want to have one that has a different throttling. You would put it after the base, and it would override that throttling setting. So that's looking at the policies. What we're going to do now is we're going to hop out to the developer portal real quick. And that's going to just come up in a second. So this is the standard, stock standard developer portal. And I can go in there and look at my APIs. So now if I look at my Echo API, you'll see that here's my Git resources. This is the type of information it's going to take. Now, how many people, if you had a developer that was going to do an Objective-C application for an iPhone and they wanted a sample of how to call your API in Objective-C, how many of you could write that sample for them? My hand's not up because I couldn't. But the nice thing about API Management Developer Portal is if I click on Objective-C, that is the sample source code to call that API from Objective-C. So your developers, you give a developer access to this portal, they can pick their favorite language. And that's what I had to do for the developer that was doing the Zendesk work. It's all JavaScript. So I basically showed him how he could get the JavaScript to do that call from the developer portal. So what we could do now is we can go in here and we scroll up and we can hit try it. Actually, I want to do the retrieve instead of the create. So we'll do try it. We can see what the headers are, it's going to pass. Now, if I had an authorization for OAuth 2, there would be a drop-down list there of how I wanted to authenticate against the OAuth 2. So I could say credentials, and it would pop a logon window up. I'd put my credentials in. It would go off to the OAuth 2 server, bring back the token, and insert the token in the header for that call, and go off and call that, use that for the call. What I'm going to do is just do a send, and you'll see that there's the results of that, and it took 1,278 milliseconds. I can just keep doing that. That starter product has a throttling on it, so I can only do 5 calls a minute. So I did 5 calls there, and now I get a 429 back that says I've exceeded my throttling limit. But the nice thing about it, do you notice it tells you how long you have to wait? So that at least gives the developer an idea of why it failed and what he has to do. And that's basically through that policy. If you was using the subscription key from the unlimited product, I would never get that. But that one is defaulting to using the starter key, which has throttling applied all the way across the API. So the other thing is that when we register in the developer portal, we go to our profile, and whatever APIs that we have subscription keys for show up in our developer profile. So those are the keys for both the starter and the unlimited subscription that I have. So one thing we did notice is that by default, all of the APIs get published as developer in the developer group. And if I go out and register on API Management, I automatically become part of the developer group. So what we actually did for our other product that we were helping a client do is we created an internal developer group and put their internal stuff in the internal developer group and only the stuff that we wanted exposed to the outside world in the developer group. So just made it a little bit easier to manage those kind of things. Now, how many people have run into a situation where they need a static IP to go through a firewall? Okay? I ran across this the other day, and it's a really interesting side effect of the way API management works. So the customer had a WCF service that they needed to call inside of their firewall, and it needed to have a static IP. So what now, because I can do the WSDL, and I can actually publish that SOAP service. If I publish that SOAP service through API management, all of the instances of API management have a static IP address. So if I make the call through API management, that static IP address is what hits the service inside of your firewall. So that is that's one way around it. The alternative is if I have to publish an API in Azure itself and I want a static IP address, I have to go to a app services environment, which the cost is about double what the standard API management instance worth. So you can, it's about 1600 minimum, I think, for a app services environment. So you can think about how you want to do that. But that was one of the side effects I found, because I had a customer that had to have a static IP address, and we basically spent about a week exploring all the different ways we could get a static IP address there. So let me hop back to the slides. Okay. Now what we want to do is talk about logic apps. Now, and from most people's perspective, and those of us have been ingrained in the BizTalk community for a while, logic apps is BizTalk in the cloud. Not quite, but close. So basically, it's a workflow. It's got connectors. So there's a lot of connectors we'll look at that go, and the one that's very good is they're working on an SAP connector. So you could do that. They've got some Salesforce connectors. They've got Dropbox. They've got OneDrive. We'll have a look in a few minutes at all the different connectors they have available. They've also got some B2B messaging. So how many people have had to deal with EDI messages? So they've got all of the EDI and AS2 as part of the logic apps now, so that you can do your conversion and do, I think it's both EDIFACT and X12 and AS2. So that's all in the logic app side of things. They are using Azure Functions in the background to do some of that processing. And then they've also got a hybrid connector. At the moment, the only one they've got out there is SQL, but they're working on a file adapter. So what happens is you install a client inside of your firewall. It uses a relay to talk to your logic app running in Azure so that you don't have any inbound firewall holes. They're only outbound firewall holes, and you can talk to your SQL server on premises. So we're going to go have a bit of a demo of our logic apps. So if we go back here, I've got a couple of logic apps created, but if I want to create a new logic app, I'll switch, don't I? Thank you. So if we go here to our logic apps. Now, one interesting thing that's happened in the last month is they've changed the pricing model on the logic apps. You used to have an app service plan, and each app service plan gave you so many actions a month. They've gone now to a dynamic plan, so you don't have to have an app service plan, but you pay for every action that gets executed. So if you are a very heavy user of logic apps, it's a little bit more expensive than it was. If you're a light user of logic apps, it's probably a little bit cheaper for that. So if I go in here to my logic apps, I do an add. And of course, I'm doing a demo, so it takes longer. So what it's going to do, it's going to be just basically asking me for a name. So I'll do Ignite. NZBCO3, a subscription, a resource group. I tend to put all of them in the same resource group. And then I'm going to use the Australia East data center. And so I do a create. So in a second, it'll finish creating that. What I'm going to do in the meantime is, actually, let's see how long that takes. So it's actually creating a logic app. It doesn't run, like I said, inside of your app service plan. It creates a dynamic plan that's already deployed, so that's good. We'll do a refresh. We'll go down here. And the big takeaway I have on Logic Apps is Logic Apps is an orchestration tool for APIs. If you looked at other orchestration tools and if you've had any experience with BizTalk, you can do other things kind of in that. But basically what Logic Apps are is I'm calling this API, I'm calling this API, I may be making a decision about the results of that API and going down one path or another, or maybe doing some looping. But then I'm calling, every time I'm doing anything, I'm pretty much calling an API. So that's where you get some of that service reuse, because if I need an API for my website, I can also use that API in my Logic Apps. Say if I want to place an order, I can actually go in there and the first thing in my Logic App, I might look up the customer, get the customer details back. I go look up the products, get all the products back. And then I can put that into a call where I actually place an order, go create the transaction for the order. So I've used all of those APIs that I already had for my website, and I now reuse those in my Logic App to do that processing instead of having to write a separate API that does all of those things in the back end. It helps me keep that separation too, because my customer API may be in a different API app from my transactional stuff. So now I don't have any tight coupling between those. So what you'll notice in there now, I have a bunch of templates. So I'm not going to go through all the templates, but there's a bunch of templates that'll do. There's one that can look at Twitter, deliver an email. We're going to just start with a blank Logic App. And we'll see that we've got a list of the Microsoft managed APIs. So we can do a request response. So that'll give us a HTTP endpoint that we can hit. But we've also got a bunch of these. I haven't even heard of Basecamp. Has anybody heard of Basecamp? That's a new one that's appeared just recently. Blogger, Dropbox, and Box. The Common Data Model, Dynamics 360. They were pretty quick getting that one out. GitHub. So there's a fair few of these, and there's even more that we load. And these are all of the connectors that are supplied by Microsoft to basically drive your Logic App. And we go down through there. We've got Service Bus. There's also some new Service Bus ones that lets you do a peak lock now instead of just a receive and delete. So you can control, if you have failures, you can leave it back on the queue. So, and then once I've done, I pick one. So I'm just going to go up and just pick a request one. I can give it a sample schema here. I don't have to. And then I can go do a new step, and I can add an action. I can add a condition, or I can add a for each loop, or a do until, or a scope. So if you've got a list of products coming back, you could do a for each through that and do something different with each product, things like that. Or again, in like the request response. But also one of the things I can do is I can see APIs that are deployed in my subscription as API apps. I can see APIs that are deployed in API management. And I can see Logic Apps in the same region. So I can call from one Logic App to another Logic App. And I also can call into Azure Functions. We're going to come back to that in a minute. So basically, just kind of a quick high-level overview of the Logic Apps. And let's hop back to the slides, because we're going to put all of this together in just a minute. So now we're going to talk a little bit about Azure Functions. Now, Azure Functions, in my opinion, is the glue that holds all of these pieces together. So one of the things that I tend to use Azure Functions for is if I've got a JSON object coming in and I've got a different JSON object going out, from inside of my Logic App, I can call an Azure function that has a little bit of C# code in it that will change that JSON object to that JSON object and come back to me. Because there's really, at the moment, there's not a mapping tool for JSON. For XML, or us diehard XML people, there's XSLT. But there's not a tool at the moment for JSON. So you need to write a little bit of code. But you don't want to have to publish a whole API to do that. So that's why Azure Functions come in handy. So with our Azure Functions, we've got a lot of different methods. So the original incarnation, really, of Azure Functions was the web roles on the classic cloud service. And that was like, okay, somebody uploads an image and I need to go create the thumbnails and stuff like that to show it on my website so I could do some background processing. Azure Function has got that same capability. It can watch storage, it can watch queues, any of those kind of things. The big difference they have made with Azure Functions, it can now expose an HTTP endpoint. The original worker roles did not have an HTTP endpoint. You had to go through a web role, drop it into storage, and then your worker role would pick it up. So your Azure Functions now can live on their own. Now, the prime space for Azure Functions in a lot of cases is how many people have Windows services running on their on-premises machines that pick up files from a location, do some manipulation, and do something with them? Azure Function is the ideal spot for that. Because basically, you can almost port that Windows service code straight in and get rid of all the management pieces of it. It basically will go look for, say, that file in a blob storage, do the processing, output it the same way. So that's going to be, to me, that was the missing pieces for a lot of the lift and shift integrations, was that something that could react easily to queues and storage and things like that. We also have choice of language. So basically, it supports pretty much anything you can think of. I basically do mine in C# because that's what I'm used to. But again, it's whatever you want to use there. You can put an Azure function now in an app service plan still, or you can have the dynamic. So the dynamic can be a little bit slow sometimes. If you haven't used that app service, that Azure function for a little while, it may take a little while to spin up. But typically, my kind of rule of thumb on that, whether you want dynamic or an app service plan, is how often I'm using it. If I'm processing files once a week, I will have a dynamic plan where it's basically just uses whatever CPU it uses and I pay for that. Where I've got an app service plan, I'm paying for that 24/7. So that gives me a little bit there. Also, again, we've got a lot of integrations. There's Event Hub, Document DB, Mobile App Tables, Notification Hub, Service Bus, Storage, Webhooks, on-premise using Service Bus. So there's a lot of different ways that we can get data in and out of the Azure Functions. So let's go have a quick look at Azure Functions. So if I go back to the portal, and what I did to make it easier for my the demo is I've pinned the resource group to the desktop, so that basically will show me everything in my resource group. And you can see the Azure Functions has got a little lightning bolt inside of the carrots. And now, slightly different than the way logic apps and API apps work is we create one function app, and we can have a lot of functions inside of that function app. So again, that's where we get that scale. So I can have dozens of functions inside of one function app, and the function app is associated with that. So we'll see here I've got a generic webhook, but I can go create a new function. I've got a whole list of templates there. So I've got a blob trigger, just code that I could call manually, an Event Hub trigger, generic webhooks, a GitHub So you can have a webhook from GitHub. When somebody commits something in GitHub, it could kick a Azure function to go do something. And we've got an HTTP, we've got a manual trigger, and we have a queue trigger. Why would you want a manual trigger? You might have something in a website where the user has done something and they need to generate a report. So you could actually call that manual trigger from the website to kick off that process. You could, most cases, you would just drop it into a queue so that you could load balance across a few things. But in case you didn't want to, what we'll do is we'll pick up the queue trigger in C Sharp. We give it a name. We can also need to connect it to a storage account. Let's see, storage account connection. Let's do a new. I'm just going to use the function storage, which is probably not that great of an idea, but it's good for a demo. And what happens is this is the name of my queue item. And you'll see that in a second when I hit create. So what we have is we have that it's created our function in here, and it's passing in that queue item. So in my code here, if I want to access that queue item, it's already coming in to my function. So all I have to do is manipulate that from there. We can also go here to the integrate, and we can also do a new output. Say we wanted to go to pretty much any of those things, we can add an output. So for our function, can come in through a queue and go out through pretty much any of those things. So I might want to write it into the Azure Document DB, go out to a service bus queue, go out HTTP. I can do that in there. I'm not going to do anything at the moment on that, but basically we'll see. We also have an ability to test down here. So I can go down here and I can hit run. And you'll see there's the execution of my trigger in there. So that's basically done a trigger, and we've got the details about that execution. And again, I can create pretty much anything. There's also a monitoring tab so I can monitor what's happened in my function. Takes a little while to come up, but basically it gives us some monitoring data there that we want to do. So I'm going to hop back to, that's basically a very quick introduction because I want to get to the point where we're talking about how these things work together. So now what we want to do is look at how we use all of these components together. And so one of the things we want to do is maybe we want to publish our Logic App and our Azure function in API management. So I will tell you, the way I'm going to show you is the hard way to do it. If you wait about 2 weeks, it'll be a one button and a search. Because basically part of the new portal they're going to do is going to have a button that says publish an a Logic App as an API, publish a function as an API. And it's going to give you a list of those in your subscription, and it's going to automatically take care of that work. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this now. I was hoping when I put the talk in that they were going to have this all done, but as anything, they didn't. They fixed up, they broke some other stuff, but they didn't get that done. So I will show you some ones I've already done. And why would you want to publish a Azure function or a Logic App as an API app? Well, most of it is because you want better control over its authentication. Because both Azure functions and Logic Apps don't have the breadth of authentication methods that your APIs do. You notice we got that OAuth 2 and all of that kind of stuff that's available in API management. We may want that in front of our Logic Apps, and we may want that in front of our Azure functions. Yeah, well, that the Logic app already does that, but we if you look at the calling URL for a Logic app, it's got this really ugly key and everything on it, and it's a lot easier. And also, there's some restrictions on whether some of them have to be post. And I had one customer that, we've already got that set up as a Git. How do we change it? And we kind of said no. But now if I publish it into API management, I can use a policy. I can publish it as a Git in API management, change the call to a post when it goes off to the backend service, and then return the data. So I can actually do that manipulation inside of API. So if we look in here in our API management portal and look back at the APIs, let me grab that. So what I've done here is I've got a API that's from Azure Functions. So if we look here, my functions URL is IgniteBC Azure-API, or that's that. If we look at the settings, it's actually coming from IgniteBC AzureWebsites.net/API. And then if we look at the operation kind of doesn't look like our normal Git or post or put operation. But because it's got the code that you need to execute the Azure function. You could hide all of this and do a URL rewrite if you wanted to inside of here. But again, I can publish that. Then I can go out here to my developer portal, go to my API from Azure function, and I've got it set up to where it takes a first name and a last name. I can do try it, and then basically go down and do a send. And we got a 200 response back, greetings, hello, Azure function. And then if we go look at our function, and this is the generic webhook. That hasn't updated. Let's go into the develop window. No, it hasn't updated. But basically, you should be able to see that call in there. Right now, it's coming through the developer portal And that way, it gives me more control of my authentication and things like that. And also, what happens if I've got a case where I need to get something out there quickly? It's going to be an API eventually. I want to get something out there quickly, so I write some quick code in Azure function to get people some data. I want to change it later on. If I put it in API management, I can do that change later on and be able to not have people change the call. They can do the exact same call in. And it goes to a function in the background. I can do the same thing with Logic apps. So if I go in here to API management, I can see that I've got another API that is from a Logic app. And again, it's got a similar type operation there. It's even uglier. It's got the operation ID is a GUID. So in this case, I probably want to do a rewrite. I'd go in there and make the operation a Git of some sort, and then inside of the policy, do a URL rewrite so it actually calls that ugly GUID-based URL. And it gives me that control that I don't have to convince everybody how to do that. And also, because API management's got the developer portal, people can discover things. So that discovery makes it a lot better. So basically, that's the demo on that. Let's go to the next one. So the next thing I might want to do is I might want to consume an API, management API from a Logic app. And to me, this is really the sweet spot. I get all of my APIs put in API management, and then I can use Logic apps to do that orchestration. And again, the Azure functions need to be used where I need to do that mapping that I really can't, I don't want to do in an API. I want to call a little bit of code that does a little bit of work on that. And basically, and I can intersperse those inside of my Logic app to basically show that. So We can look here if we go back into our Logic app. Let's go back into the So if I bring up this second No, actually I want to bring up the first one. So basically, this first one is calling my retrieve resource in the Echo API. And you'll notice that it's got the subscription key that I need to use. Now, with the Logic apps, you can create those in Visual Studio as an ARM template. And you can parameterize it so you can have your subscription key for your dev, your test, your UAT, and your prod, and replace that in there. And that basically will call off to my API management API. And this one's on a reoccurring basis, so I'm calling it every 10 minutes. So I may have an API that will give me back the latest data every 10 minutes if I need to process any changes in the database. The API is taking care of how it does that piece of it. Then I basically can go out and, in this particular case, I'm going into OneDrive and creating a file. So every time something changes in my API, I want to write a file out to OneDrive. Somebody needs to pick that up. It could be an on-premises thing picking it up. It could be just somebody that needs a copy of these things that change. So basically, all we would do to set that up is if I go in here and I'm just going to delete these real quick. I'm going to grab that subscription key so I can put that back in. So I go in here. I go, instead of showing managed APIs, I show API management APIs in my subscription. It shows my instance of API management. Shows my Echo API. Then it shows me all of the operations in the Echo API. And I can give it the parameter there. I give it my subscription key. And I give it a frequency of how often it wants to retrieve that. So I say 10 minutes. And then I can save that. The nice thing about the Logic apps, I can test at whatever level. I could just run this Logic app just like this, and it would bring me back some data, and I can look at it in the debug. So if I do that, I'll close this edit window. At the moment, I've got my this disabled, so I'll go ahead and enable it. I had a little trouble with leaving one of them running one time and ended up with a pretty good sized bill. So I'll do a trigger. And then basically, we should be able to see the refresh. And this is the Logic app run. And that's the details, and that's basically the output of that call. And shows us the input if we need to do any debugging. Okay. I've got another sample that's doing mocking of APIs, but basically we're pretty much out of time today on this one. But if you're interested in seeing how to mock APIs, just catch me this week at Ignite, and I can walk you through that. The only caveat being is if you saw the talk from Ignite US, in the new portal, there's going to be a little box that says mock that you can just check, and it will mock your APIs for you. So after I spent all the time building the mocking framework, it's like, okay, they made it a checkbox now. So But if you need to get specific data back, so I was using Mockaroo, which is a mocking framework that you mark up your class with certain things, like if it's a first name or a last name or a company name, it'll bring you appropriate data back. So I used API management with a policy that's calling off to an Azure function. And what I will, I'll show you that bit of code real quick here. Let me pop back to my machine. And I've got the the policy to do a git. So this is the policy. Huh? Oh, I didn't get the machine, did I? Sorry. So that's the policy to call an Azure function from a policy. So basically, there's a URL in there. I set a header, and then basically, I put the output into a variable, and then I return the response. So that's a very powerful feature of policies. I can go off to an Azure function. That's the case, maybe I want to do JSON to SOAP before they get it out. I can have a function that converts it. I can then call my backend SOAP. I can call another Azure function to convert it from SOAP to JSON. So I can do a lot of things there. So. Done that demo. So basically, in summary, I've heard a couple of people make comments recently that if you're doing anything with APIs in Azure and you're not using API management, you're not doing it right. Because just all of the power that API management gives you. And I've battled this question lots of times, but it costs too much money. BizTalk always had that same problem too. But the features it gives you when you start digging into what you can do in the policies and what you can do with the authentication, what you can do with the developer portal to basically be able to get people started with your APIs. Because one rule about APIs, if they're easy to use, people are more likely to use them. If they're hard to use, they'll look at your API for 5 minutes and go do something else. If you can make it easy through the developer portal for them to call your API, to test your API, they're going to use your API a lot easier, especially if you're taking it out to a public. Also, if you watch the talk from the US on API management, they have published their Trello board for everybody to look at. So you can see what they're working on, what's in their backlog, all of that kind of stuff. So you can see what's coming. So they've been very, very open about that. So basically, go out. If you've got an MSDN subscription, use your MSDN subscription to get started with API management, Logic Apps, and Azure Functions. Thank you very much. There's my contact details. You can pretty much, if you search for BizTalk Bill, you'll find me. And don't forget to fill out your evaluations. They're drawing for a Surface Pro and an Xbox S. Thank you very much.